One of the ways that Easter made sense to me is actually by going to church, which might sound a slightly odd thing to suggest coming from someone who has struggled with agnosticism. But the point about going to church over the Easter period, and really I mean from Maundy Thursday, Good Friday, as well as Easter Sunday, is that it takes you on a kind of journey that opens up the Easter story so it can touch your heart as well as your head. And that's actually a much better place, in a way a more grounded place, to try to struggle with why it might be that this tradition, Christianity, has touched so many people for, you know, millennia now. What's going on here, and might it make sense to us today? It's about a journey. If you go to church on Maundy Thursday in the evening, you'll go to the Eucharist, the communion service that commemorates the Last Supper. And it's at that moment that you get some of the most human elements, really, in the Easter story that kind of begin to open up the heart. So, for example, there's the very poignant moment where Peter denies Jesus three times and then he hears the cock crow. And in some of the gospel stories, Jesus and Peter's eyes meet and it says Peter went out and wept bitterly. There's something there that is just stark and human, and in a way speaks more to what the truth of this whole series of events is trying to get to than anything you might be able to explain in a creed. I remember once Rowan Williams, the former Archbishop of Canterbury, saying that if he could have a video camera sent back at any moment in history, it wouldn't actually be Easter Sunday to see, you know, whether the stone rolled away or not. It would be to capture that moment when Peter and Jesus' eyes met, and what that incredibly intense encounter might sort of open up in our own hearts. That begins on Maundy Thursday evening. Most churches now will go into a kind of darkness. Everything is stripped away, and there's just a few candles left on the altar, as if a flicker of light and hope is being preserved overnight. Sort of stripping bare to something very basic and primitive about hope and loss and love and death and survival. On Maundy Thursday evening. Then if you go on Good Friday, normally it's the services start about midday. There's the three-hour service, which takes you through the 3 hours, according to tradition, in which Jesus was on the cross. And it begins again with an enormously dramatic moment where the clergy walk in and they lie face down on the ground before the altar, sort of prostrate in complete silence. And again, there's something incredibly powerful about that, which opens up the imagination. It goes sort of beyond reason. It's not to say that reason doesn't have to come in at some point, but it helps you to begin from a very different place, something very human, very basic, our own anxieties and fears of emptiness and desertion, abandonment. And another very powerful moment in the Good Friday service, certainly the church I go to at Southwark Cathedral, is when people come forward to kiss the cross. There's a sort of life-size cross brought in, and people come forward one by one to venerate the cross, perhaps bow, perhaps kiss. Now, you know, put like that, it might sound like some sort of terrible idolatry, but when you're there and each person singly is going up to kiss this object that brings together across history as well as in their own lives so much hope, so much request for help and pain and anguish, there's something very powerful about that. And then sitting in the congregation as people go up as well is wonderful to sort of observe, to witness. You're there with others. There's something very containing and held about that experience. That's on Good Friday. And then, of course, Friday, you finally get to Easter Sunday with, if you're lucky again, you can go to a dawn service where light is lit as the sun rises in a fire. You know, incredibly symbolic and wonderful to observe if you struggle to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. There's a liturgy which conveys what's technically known as salvation history, but these are very ancient passages from the Bible, you know, echoing all the way back to Genesis, which again can speak very poetically, touching something metaphorical, imaginative. And for me, you know, the metaphorical and the imaginative is actually a kind of gateway into something that's much bigger than our heads alone might be able to grasp. It is a sort of fantasy, but there's a fantasy which can touch a deeper reality. And we kind of feel that it's spoken truth then, rather than a fantasy that just disappears into the air. A liturgy can do that very powerfully, and I think that the Easter Sunday morning one does that. And then, of course, it comes to the resurrection, that life has lived on after all, that love is bigger than death, that life is bigger than death, and that God can go even to the darkest places. And though at times we will feel, you know, as Jesus did on the cross, my God, why have you forsaken me? You know, if you're at all reflective, you'll know that you have moments in life like that, and even you can get in touch with a part of you that feels like that quite a lot of the time, perhaps, if you meditate, if you reflect, if you pray. Nonetheless, you know, it says that it's through that, a bit like Dante's journey through hell in the Divine Comedy, it's through that that new life is born, and that the network, the dependency, the connection of all creation in life, actually, ultimately, in love, lives on and is sustained. You know, you might want to ask the questions, you know, what does it mean to say that Jesus rose again? Did that actually happen? You know, well, I mean, for me, actually, when I look at the gospel stories, it's quite clear that whatever it was to see Jesus after he rose again, it was many things. Some people saw him quite concretely, you know, they ate things with him. Other people were with him for quite a long period of time and didn't recognize him, and it was only later that they did. Others, again, were in a room, and suddenly Jesus appears amongst them. And this is not one concrete sort of evidence approach to what happened at the resurrection, it seems to me. It's trying to suggest something much, much broader, that new life can be found even in the darkest places, and that what happened to Jesus and then with the disciples is testimony to that. And so this is my sort of take on it, really. If you want to try to get into Easter, then try find a church which has a really good rich liturgy, where they go for the symbolism, they go for the light, they go for the darkness, and let it speak to your heart as well as your head, and rest in that, and just ask yourself, you know, does this seem like it's conveying some deep truth to me? And if so, then, you know, try and allow that truth, even if it's unknown, uncertain, to draw you, to allure you forward by its beauty, by its poetry, by what it seems to be saying at really, I think, the deepest levels.